This is the BCA Podcast, the outreach arm of Beards Creek Adventures, and your weekly source for all things faith, family, and stewardship. We're your hosts, Charlie and Mike Culkin. Join us each week for interviews, discussions, laughs, and encouragement. We hope you guys enjoy the show.
Welcome back to BCA, and today I have one of my favorite people in the world, and then another guy. And
I guess we gotta flip a coin, see which one. I'm the other guy, John. I'm the other guy.
I'll reveal at the end who is who.
We'll see how the interview goes, right?
That's right. So this morning, well, today we're not podcast. What do you, Pete? You're a podcaster guy. Do you go like? Do you just pretend that your podcast is being recorded at? Like in no time, no space at all.
Yeah, I don't say morning or afternoon.
Yeah,
I just say welcome to the show. Today we have with us John Goodwin.
You're doing good. Keep going. Yeah, John Goodwin.
That's how I do it. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, today, this day, we have Pete Rogers and then that other guy, John Goodwin from Wild Game Freaks, and we're for those of you that are listening. Boy, we are off to a good start, aren't we?
Yeah, we
really are. John and I are pastors together. Well, we're not together. We're both pastors, and we're bringing Pete in to two different churches to come and share some of his hunting adventures and trapping adventures. And Pete, what you're into all kinds of stuff, right? I mean, you're
if it's legal,
yeah,
outdoor related. I've pretty much tried it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I had somebody ask if because I mentioned something about he'll cover everything from hunting and hiking to golfing, and they like, is he really a golfer?
Yeah.
Well, not a good one.
No. No, not at all.
That was my question. Yeah.
I think somebody one time wrote that golf is a good walk spoiled, and that's a good definition for it. It will bring out the emotions in you that you didn't know that you had.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I can see that.
But at this point, at my age now, I don't play that much because it's expensive and I have two jobs and I'm really busy, but I don't even care about the score. I just go out there and have fun.
Yeah.
Just kind of do something different, get my mind on something else, go out there and hit the ball, you know. And, you know, I shoot in the mid 70s or so, but it gets hotter than that. I don't play at all.
At nine holes? Nine holes, right?
No. Okay. I got it. John didn't get it.
No, I got you.
That's all Mike Rose. That's 70s guy. He's a
There's a wall being removed in our church today.
I thought it was amputations.
So, yeah, well, I don't think
I thought so. Churches weren't about putting up walls.
No, we're tearing it down, actually. Removing a wall. So
we're moving a wall. Well, good. Good.
Tearing it down, man.
But yeah, I do golf. I ride motorcycles, street bikes particularly. I enjoy hunting and fishing and hiking and backpacking and camping. I'm actually in the market for a camper right now. I'm trying to decide if I want a driving camper, which is what I call an RV, or a travel trailer, a pull behind. At $3.50 a gallon for gas, the pull behind is looking a lot better.
You know? Yeah.
It's looking a lot better. So yeah, I like to try it all. There's things outdoors that just really don't interest me, but if they involve excessive exercise, I'm not interested in it. You know? That's why I like electric bikes. I'm not going to pedal if I don't have to. No.
Do you have an electric bike?
Not yet.
No,
I'm in the market. Market. I'm actually interviewing next Monday the owners of Baku.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah. Did I say that name right? It's such a hard one to say. Baku.
B-A-K-C-O-U.
Yeah, but they're both Christians.
So my buddy Greg has an electric bike and he let me try it out and it was so cool.
Yeah.
So cool. Yeah. And I went, you know, way down the road and then back into the woods on it and
loved
it. So
they're pretty pricey though, you know. the Baku, I don't remember the name. I met them at SHOT Show and introduced myself, and they're like, hey, we would love to talk about our faith. We never get to do that. So they're going to be on the show next week, David and Brian. I don't remember their last names. But they have one that has like a 40-mile range.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, now I have an electric side-by-side. So let me – I'm not talking about Baku. I'm talking about electric machines, right? Is – if it, mine says it's a 15-mile range. It's a tracker from Bass Pro. But that 15-mile range is not calculated with a 200-pound man sitting in it and hauling a deer in the back or tree stands, whatever, or going up hills and down hills and stuff, right? Yep. So it's not a realistic number. So what I have found with mine, with me in it, and I have what I'd call hilly ground, but not mountainous, okay? Mm-hmm. Where I hunt is I can get about 10 miles.
Okay.
If I put another person in it or gear, it goes down to about 8, you know, and that's a little frustrating because, I bought it instead of the gas one because of the 15-mile range and because it's quiet and independent suspension and all that kind of stuff, all the other features too. But I was like, 15 miles, man, I won't ever do that in a weekend. Well, I got to charge it every day. And the drawback of an electric side-by-side versus a gas one is, which seems simple until you do it, is with a gas one, you run out of gas. What do? You pour gas in and keep going. Electric one, you run out of juice. You got to plug it in and wait 2 hours.
Yeah.
You know, and so you got to plan that in your day. All right. So we're going to plug it in at lunchtime. We'll take a break a little bit longer than I like to. We got to wait for Elvis. That's what I call it because it's EVIS, electric vehicle independent suspension. So I call it Elvis. Got to let Elvis charge up. I didn't think he was dead, but anyway, before you can do anything. So on those mileage things, take that with a grain of salt when they say how far they will go. Because if you're pulling something and you're a 200-pound man ish, and you know you got your gear on there, all that stresses the battery. And if you're going uphill, downhill, all that stuff stresses the battery. So I would cut it in half of whatever it says.
Cold weather will do the same thing to it too.
Right.
So they're finding that with EV cars up here where they're, you know, you're supposed to get 300 miles and you're getting about half of that because during the cold weather.
Right.
On heat and stuff.
So, yeah. But yeah, to your thing, Mike, I like to do pretty much anything outdoors. Yeah, I do.
Cool. Mm-hmm. John, do you like the outdoors?
Yeah, I kind of do. Kind of do. Yeah, I'm I love white-tailed deer. Chase a lot of white-tailed deer, you know. Done a little bear hunting, done small game hunting, but white-tailed deer is where it's at, in my opinion. So,
thanks. It really wasn't.
Mike, that's because he's never hunted turkeys. That's the reason he says that.
Well, I've hunted them, just not well. Let's see. I didn't mention that. Yeah, I've done some turkey hunting with a couple guys that knew what they were doing and did get close enough that it was almost a deal, but yeah, couldn't get a shot. And, that was cool. I will say that. I mean, hearing them talk back to you and come in, and had some hens like take off on a field and they flew right over my head. You know, I mean, it was just, it was super cool. Yeah. I will say that. But right where I live, I just don't see a lot of turkeys. I've seen, you know, I run trail cameras almost all year long, and I think I've only gotten like 2 pictures of turkeys.
Wow.
And all my deer hunting right near my house, I've only seen 1 turkey when I was deer hunting. And now this morning, I on my way to church, about mile and a half down the road from me, there was a flock of turkeys in a field, which I went, I need to figure out who owns that field. See if I can get get one of those Newcomb hunting blinds on the edge of that.
That's right. So, you know, Archibald Rutledge said, the great Southern scribe from yesteryear, said there are hunters and there are turkey hunters, and they're not the same.
Yeah,
well, guess we're not the same. I don't know, but you got to hunt where the animals are, right? That's
Well, there's that. There is that.
Yeah. And they won't be there tomorrow.
Right. No. Like the turkeys
move. I have a buddy's property I've been eyeballing. I'm going to ask about because I see turkeys regularly across the road from his place on his cut cornfield. So I want to see if I can get into his property and, this year we'll see. I mean, the beauty is he's 3 minutes from church. So I could leave my house at 4:30 in the morning and get set up and hunt a few hours and then head to church, unless I shoot a bird, then I'm probably going home taking care of that. But
my turkey hunt is my favorite. Just in case you wonder. Yeah.
Pete, have you interviewed Blake Lawson yet with Hollerback Game Calls?
I have not.
He's a good interview. I just had him last week, and his turkey calls are just gorgeous, absolutely amazing. I can get you. Well, John hooked me up with him, but I can get you the information for if you want him at some point. But really neat guy. He's a believer and just a neat guy. So. Mm.
It seems like we corresponded last year, John, because you hooked me up with him too.
Yeah, I sent you his info.
We just never got it nailed down, so I'll have to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, super, super good dude. But his stuff is just a work of art, too. Like, I wish I could have seen it in person. I know Mike bought some stuff from him, and I've got a grunt call in the shopping cart, and I've yet to hit purchase from him, but I need to do that.
I've used the same grunt call. I used the Primos Roar, the very first one that they came out with.
Yeah, I've got one of those.
I have called in so many deer with that. I'm gonna use it until it just stops working. It has the best sound of any grunt call I've ever used. And
is that the one with the snort wheeze thing on top of it?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
And I have the one. I've used that to bring in bucks too. I had a buck at I ranged him about 190. Of course, I was rifle hunting, but I always like him to get as close as possible. Right. And he couldn't hear my grunt, so I snort wheezed at him across the clear cut, and he just turned his head and just like he's on a string, just came straight to him. Wasn't in a hurry, just came walking. And isn't I shot it, about 15 yards.
Isn't that amazing though? Like that's the thing I love about calling deer is that they will pinpoint your tree.
It's amazing.
Out of nowhere. Yeah. They could be 120 yards away, walking the other direction. You hit that grunt tube sometimes. Sometimes they will walk directly to your tree.
Yep.
Yes.
And that's, where I say that to people that don't hunt early season or hunt the rut, like here, the rut's during bow season here in New York. Yeah. So you really don't see that much. Later in the season, I mean, you can, some people do call them late in season, but I find they're much more responsive earlier,
pre-rut,
third week of October to first, second week in November, And, to the people that have never heard that, man, it's just so cool. I mean, and even getting busted, I've been busted by some really nice deer that I don't dare move because, they're walking right at me and that's the thing that intrigues me about turkey hunting that, my hope is to go down and actually hunt turkeys with Pete next month, but is that the idea of talking to animals and having them, watching them respond or hearing them respond is just so cool to me. I just love it.
When you hear that turkey just gobbling those southern hardwoods, the way it echoes through those big hardwoods, it gives me chills every time. And it can be so loud that it's hard to know how far they are.
Right.
Just like last year, it was mid-morning before I had one gobble. And I had one gobble. He's probably 200 yards away. Let me move in. And as I was walking in closer, he gobbled again. And he'd already closed half the distance. To me, I was like, I gotta sit. So I just sat down like right there, boom, wide open. Couldn't find anything to get on. And I just laid down after that. And then there he is at 40 yards, walk around looking for me. I let him walk by so I could scoot up against a tree and get hidden. And, Ended up calling him in and shooting it with my 410, my CVA 410 scout, 37 yards. Wow. I went to the turkey and then I ranged back to the tree I was sitting on.
Now, you're using the TSS? Or
Yeah, Verdix that year. I was using Verdix TSS.
This stuff will reach out, what, like 50, 60 yards, right?
Well, in the 410, I patterned out to 40.
Okay.
I didn't think he was that far, but when it's all happening so fast sometimes. I thought he was like 30, and that's how, it's number 10 shot too.
Wow.
Number 10 shot. And I can remember back in the day, cause I started hunting turkeys in 1978 before any of y'all were born. And
lies.
You're welcome. You're welcome. But back then it was, you get the biggest gun you can find with the biggest shell you can find.
Yep.
I mean, it was 10. I remember the H&R 10 gauge. Remember those? The single shot had a barrel about the size of a drain pipe
gun or something.
Yeah. You had to drag it to the woods. Had little wheels on the bottom of it. You could roll it behind you to get. I never shot the 10 gauge, but I shot 3.5s for years because that's what you're supposed to do. You got to get the biggest gun that you can and the tightest choke that you can shoot. And I've missed a lot of turkeys with those super tight chokes. And through years of doing it, I went from number 4 shot, which is what I thought I used to have, to number 6, to number 7s, 7.5s. And then I went to the 20 gauge. I said, I got to make this a little bit more challenging. And I shot 20 gauge from late 80s until I discovered the 410. I would literally just shoot a 20 gauge. I like the Winchester Longbeards. That's a great lead shot for turkeys. If anybody in the 20 or the 12s, the Winchester Longbeard or the Longbeard X is what I think the best lead shot for turkeys available. And I've patterned a lot of them through the years. Heavy shot's pretty good, but it's the price of heavy shot versus the TSS is about the same.
Yeah.
I can't believe the price of some of the turkey loads now. It's
insane. Dude, my 410 shells are $8 a piece.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was just looking at them. I was just at the store, $40 for 5 shots. For
that, you can buy a butterball in the freezer department.
It's not near as much fun, though.
No, it's not. Not
near as much fun. And they don't like it when you shoot the freezer. So,
no, that's true. But that 410's got to be, is it a pretty light gun? I mean,
it's under 5 pounds. It's right at, I have a Hawk scope on it, turkey scope. So with that is 5 pounds and 4 ounces, I think, 5 ounces, somewhere in there. Okay. It has a Jeb's choke that comes on it. And all 410 chokes, for the listeners, they only make one constriction size for 410s, right? So you can't, it's not like a 12, you get all these different constriction sizes. Yeah. There's only one for 410. So it doesn't matter if it's a True Lock or a Jeb's or a Carlson. If it's a 410, it's the same constriction. Right. But CVA is partnered with Jeb's, so it comes with the Jeb's choke. Okay. And it comes with a Picatinny rail also.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and a sling. Wow. So it's a single shot, break action, single shot. And it does not, what is it called? Eject the shell. It extracts it. Is that the right phrase?
Yeah.
It just lifts it up.
Break open.
A little frustrating when you got gloves on your hands and you're running to the turkey to make sure that you got him. You're trying to get that shell out, but that's a small price to pay. But I've never had to shoot one twice. So,
yeah. Is that the Scout, Pete?
It is. It is the CBA Scout. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are budget-friendly guns too.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember the price of it. It's around 400. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I think so.
Sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I stopped by the CBA booth at the Harrisburg show.
Yeah.
Knowing that you weren't able to be there.
Is that why you stopped? Or?
That's why I went there. That's why you went up.
But I ran into Tim Andrews. Are you familiar with him?
No.
So he's taken over your spot at CVA for that week, apparently.
Okay.
And, but we had, talk about a circle. We had him in at a previous church that I was at to do a game show or a game dinner like 25 years ago. And he remembered it. Like he remembered because his buddy had won the shotgun that we had done a giveaway with, but, So I guess he was kind of filling in at CVA at the
booth.
So
cool.
Not as good looking, but
well, you do.
We can't all be right.
When you go to the junior varsity, what do you expect?
So my favorite turkey hunt. I was working a ridge down in the southern tier of New York, and I was calling, and I had two gobblers coming in. They're both responding. I could see them down the hill. They're making their way up, and I'm like, "Oh, this is coming together perfect. This is ideal." And they made it to about 50 yards, and next thing I know, I hear all this crashing in the woods to my left, and I look, and there's no less than 20 bison that are coming through. We had a bison farm was the next property over. They broke through the fence, and now I'm sitting in the middle of 20 bison, and the turkeys are long gone. And I'm thinking, they're big animals. I don't know if you've ever been up next to bison. They taste great, but
I would have seen that as God giving me a sign that instead of the turkey, you're supposed to get the bison, Mike.
Yeah, I mentioned that to the farmer. He said it's going to be a heck of a drag out, though.
Does number seven shot drop bison?
I don't know if it would or not. I don't know.
Yes, yes. Take a shot.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. That's cool. That's
good. Well, it's like a buddy of mine told me, Mike, about dragging out a bison. He said, when I was hunting in Alaska, and I saw this really good caribou way back, a long way from camp. He said, kid, the only way you're going to get that out of there is with a skillet and a fork.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do with the bison. You got to eat it where it lays.
Yeah, that guy. So you interviewed a guy. What's his name? Is it modern day mountain man? He goes by or something like that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Billy yeah. Moss.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Man, his stuff again, you make that comment. This guy is hiking, you know, setting up camp where they fly into, he's glassing stuff at, you know, 800-900,000 yards away. Yeah. Then they're sneaking in downwind to these grizzly bears up in the mountains and shooting them and packing them out like multiple day packouts too.
It's
crazy.
Did you hear him say when I asked him what the heaviest packout he had was? Did you hear that?
No, I don't remember what that was.
He, because I asked him, I said, what does a 10-foot grizzly bear hide and skull weigh? Yeah. Because you got to pay that out one trip, right? You don't want to cut the hide up. He said the heaviest that I've know that I've packed, because I weighed it, was 180 pounds, and I carried it over 7 miles.
Oh.
180 pounds.
That's a real man right there.
That's a man's man.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe, I wouldn't have been able to stand up.
That's crazy.
Of course, I'm an old man now. I mean, I'm 60, but I mean, he said that, you know, he's paying for it, but he said, you know, a typical eight or nine footer is going to weigh 130, 140 pounds, the hide and the back.
Yeah. Well, some of those videos he has online are just, it's crazy, because you know, I saw one where they got an animal, but it was too late in the day, went back, you know, so you're talking like 5 miles out, 5 miles back, next morning 5 miles in, recover the animal, 5 miles back with the animal. I mean, I'm like, oh my word. Like, but they're going on these 10-day hunts and glassing for 6-7 days to begin, maybe not even pursuing, and his ability to judge the animal size from 800 yards away.
Well, he's been doing it a long time.
Is amazing. I mean, that's why he's getting paid to do it, and I'm not. Yeah. But he, amazing. So, yeah, I thought of that when you mentioned the only way you get it out was with a fork.
He's different. He's different level, and I'm sure there are others out there similar that we just don't know of.
Yeah.
But I remember in that interview, Billy said that he would have a hunter for 10 days. And the plane would come in, pick him up, drop off another guy with more supplies, and he would do it again. And he told me he'd spent over 9 years in a tent of his life. He spent over 9 years of his life in a tent in the Alaskan bush. That's incredible.
he's a godly man. He's a good man.
His book is fantastic too.
So, we'll have to see. Actually, we have to see if I should reach out to him and see if Mike, maybe, you know, I feel like he'd laugh at us whitetail hunters. I mean, guy like that, right? You know, like
I dragged a big 4-point out of the Adirondacks one time.
Yeah.
I tell you, I talk about that. It makes me want to try to pack out something heavy just to see if I can, you know?
Yeah. But then
I have,
well, I watch these videos of these guys that, right, they shoot a deer and then they lay down on top of it. And they do, like, they pick deer up like a military person is trained, right, to pick up a person.
Yeah.
And they roll over and they stand up and they're like, which I wouldn't dare carry a deer out here where I live. I'd get shot. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not, you know,
that deer's walking funny, but I'm gonna shoot him anyway.
It's like turkey hunting with a fan too. The same deal here. You'd get shot doing that too.
Well, you know, and to that, here in South Carolina, they have outlawed that on public land.
Yeah. Oh, have they? Okay.
For that reason.
Smart.
But it's very, very effective. I mean, 20 years ago, before it became popular, I had a fan that I dried stiff and I screwed it onto a tomato steak, and I would just stick it out in front of me because it was lighter than those old decoys. I'm not much of a decoy guy anyway on turkeys, because I like to run and gun, but that fan is very, very effective.
Yeah.
Very effective.
Well, yeah. funny run and gun story with turkeys and decoys all at the same time. So I'm hunting with my buddy Derek years ago. He actually talked to him. Derek Baker. He's up in Yukon. So before he went up, he and I would hunt together quite a bit, squirrels, and he took me out turkey. He had a couple good turkey spots, which he got me on birds once or twice. But and we deer hunt together. But he and I are at this farm one day, and he's trying to get me to get a turkey because I'd never gotten a turkey. So he's calling and we hear there's a bird gobbling up a storm, right? So we work our way down this hill and we get to this little opening in the middle of the woods. And he's like, there's a big tom right there. And we're like looking around these trees and sure enough, huge tom, whatever. And we get out there, get the gun up. And my buddy's like, no, don't. It was a decoy. I think we were talking to another hunter.
Oh, gosh.
There was some guy on the same property. I don't know where he came from. I don't know who he was. I know we had permission to be there, but it was like, oh, man.
My
first turkey was almost a decoy. So that would have really probably created an issue in the woods. Yeah. You know, so.
Public land hunting can be a little hairy because of that kind of stuff. That's when I stopped using decoys years ago, because I hunted mostly public land and I want to be able to get up and go and move. And most hunters that I have found on public land are pretty respectful. If you're working the bird, then they won't. But you still have a bunch of yahoos that they hear a turkey gobble and you're coming from the east, they're coming from the west, you know, cause there's no scent you have to worry about with turkey, because turkey could smell would never kill a single
We'd
one.
Never kill one. Yeah.
Not a single one. And so, you know, maybe he didn't hear me calling. I didn't hear him calling. We're both trying to work the same bird. And then we are like, well, there's a guy right there, you know? And so which one of you is going back down? Well, I always back down. I'm not going to,
over a bird.
It's a turkey. Right. I go find another one. I go find another one that nobody's working. And then we'll have a good time with it. And I think one of the things, though, when it comes to turkey hunting, though, Mike and John, is that for the novice hunter out there, is they give up too early, meaning they got a bird working and all of a sudden the bird hooks up with some hens and leaves. Right. And so what do? We get in our truck and go home pouting instead of just take a quick nap. Yep. Because you know what's going to happen at about 10 o'clock. Pretty sharp. Those hens are going to do what? They're going to leave the gobbler and go to their nest and lay their egg.
Yep.
And he's going to be like, where's all the girls go?
That's right.
I'm still ready. And all the girls are gone. And then you go, and he's, oh, there's one. And I have killed probably more turkeys between 10 and 1 than I have first thing. Now, there's nothing more exciting than them fly down and walk straight to you. Goblin is strutting, goblin is strutting, goblin is strutting. But for me, it's more satisfying if I strike one at 9 or 9:30. Decided the one I was telling you about last year. I struck him about 9:30, and well, I tell you, it's coming back to my mind. And I think he gobbled at 9:40, and he was dead by 9:55.
Wow.
That's not that normal. Usually, those afternoon birds, you can tell by the way they gobble. Are they just letting you know they're there, or are they interested?
Yep.
And that just comes from experience of listening to gobbles. Right. But it's a, I'm over here, gobble. So if you want any of me, little lady, you need to come to me, or I'm coming, honey. Just wait.
Yeah.
And sometimes you'll be walking and calling, trying to get a bird excited, and you get that, and he lets go. Just like, I know you guys sit down right now. They come on a dead run, dead run,
yep,
right to you. And I've shot many of them before they ran right over me. I mean, they coming right straight to you. And just like John said, the deer, they know exactly where you are.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I can't speak to the turkey end, but the deer end, you know, when you call, blind call sometimes, right, you better be committed to sit a while.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've had deer show up half hour, 45 minutes later.
Mm-hmm. And
again, walking right at me. So they yeah, it's, again, speaking to animals is,
it's fun,
right? It's fun. Pete, so, you've you have hunted in 42 states, is that right?
No, 18.
18.
Yeah,
I thought I had read somewhere you had been to 42 or 47 states.
I have visited 47 states. I got Oklahoma, New Mexico, and Hawaii to go.
All right,
but I've hunted in 18 states.
Okay, have you done the North American Grand Slam, Turkey Slam?
No, I haven't. I have not. I have not done the Turkey Slam yet. I've only killed Easterns.
Yeah,
that's it.
Well, they're the only ones that really matter.
Well, they're the smartest ones.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah, the Southern Turkey is even smarter than that.
Well, I think you're freezing up. I couldn't hear that last line.
The plan is, Mike, to that is, I was actually talking to the guys this weekend about it, is that in 25, I want to go to Oklahoma and hunt Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, go right through the heart of the country. And then I can kill Easterns, Rios, and Miriams along the way.
Nice.
There you go.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
So in general, 18 states of hunting, what would you say has been your favorite state to hunt in and favorite hunt overall?
Mule deer hunting is my favorite.
Okay.
Okay. I've done that in Idaho and Wyoming and Colorado, and it's so different from anything we do here in the Southeast. It's just so different. Yeah. Plus, I'm a little partial to mule deer, even though I've only killed one. I've hunted them several times. Is that I think it's the prettiest animal in North America. Mm-hmm. With that gray muzzle and those chocolate horns and that thick neck on them, I just think they're just absolutely a beautiful animal. That's me. So if they say, well, you can only hunt one animal the rest of your life, it would be turkeys. But other than turkeys, the mule deer, because of where it lives, I love the West. I love the Rocky Mountains. I love everything about it, and the way that you hunt them. They're called the gray ghosts for a reason. Okay, and that is that they. Some people say that they're too easy, but obviously that's not my experience. But where they live, how they hide, how they move, and everything about it, to me, I really enjoy the mule deer hunting, and I would do it more often if the tags were not so expensive. And don't get me started on that. You see what Colorado did this year.
Colorado, that's ridiculous.
Almost doubled. Wyoming right now is debating this year in their annual general session. As an example, I paid $378 for a mule deer tag last year, and they're talking about that going up to $680, and the antelope going up to the same number, and they're going to push elk over $1,000. So they're making it a rich man's game out there. They're going to put a lot of outfitters out of business, a lot of outfitters out of business. So it really is. So I enjoy, Mike, to your question, I enjoy hunting differently than I get to do at home, right? I mean, I love whitetails, but I can kill those in South Carolina, okay? Yep. But I've hunted whitetails in Illinois and Pennsylvania and Alabama, and then where else have I hunted whitetails? I don't remember. I don't remember where all now. Yeah, I know those. Oh, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina. I forget the ones real close to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm thinking of the ones I have to travel to.
Kentucky. But,
Kentucky. Thank you. Thank you. I've never had a chance to hunt really big whitetails. I mean, I did in Illinois when I was hunting with Ralph and Vicky. You know, they had really big deer. But as far as like the big deer, I've never had a chance to do that because I'm thinking it's going to cost me $2,000 to do that. I can hunt whitetails at home. I want to go hunt something I can't hunt at home.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go hunt antelope. I'm going to go hunt elk, or I'm going to go hunt mule deer, or I'm going to go hunt something else, you know, that I don't have a chance to hunt at home. And that's just the way I look at it because, oh, South Dakota is another place to hunt a whitetail. See, I can't remember them all. But I like the hunting the different areas too. I live in the Southeast, really thick, hot, humid, swampy areas. So when you go hunt in South Dakota, as an example, or Illinois, it's wide open plains. And that is very different kind of hunting than what I do at home. It may be the same animal, but it's very different kind of hunting. And I like that challenge. And the same thing when you go out west and you're hunting the Rockies, you're hunting a high elevation, glassing for miles for animals and sometimes seeing them 3-4 miles away. And now you got to figure out, how can I get there? Are they even worth going? It's just such a different experience. And I enjoy the experience more than the kill.
Yeah.
For me, it's all about, you know, I've been fortunate to take a lot of animals in my life, and most of them here, because until 2017, we didn't have a limit on bucks. We kill as many as we want to every year. And wow. you go through that bloodthirsty stage when you're a young hunter for a couple of decades where, if it's legal, you shoot it. And I'm not even going to talk about numbers because it just sounds wrong. And it probably was for a lot of those years. We had just had very liberal limits. And so as I've grown as a hunter, it's more about the people I meet and the places I go and the methods that I do it. Yeah, I still may be rifle hunting, but I'm in the Great Plains now. I'm in the Rocky Mountains now. I'm in Idaho, which was really steep mountains, hunting in Idaho. Very steep, very hard hunting. And that's where I killed my mule deer there, public land. Everything I've done is public land unguided. I've never been on a guided hunt.
Yep.
Never been on a guided hunt. And I've only been, and the trips to South Dakota are the only ones that magazines have paid for. Everything else I've done myself.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
That's fine. And so to that, I'm going to do a little plug here. I wrote an ebook years ago called Planning Your First Out-of-State Hunt. And it's available on Kindle. And it's because one of the things I learned is that it's a lot more doable than people realize. Mm. When people start thinking about, man, I can't afford to go hunt out west. You can too if you don't hire an outfitter. Outfitters do great stuff, but if you're going to kill something, then you need to hire an outfitter. If you're going for the experience, do it yourself. Yeah. I mean, I'm 0 for an elk. Yeah, I've never even seen an elk on my elk hunt. Man, do I have great memories and great experience and how much fun I had in trying.
Yeah.
Right. And so if I wanted to kill one, I'd hire an outfitter.
See, I have a wife that if I drag my backside back home after three or four elk hunts with nothing to show for it, she might get a little, so where's the meat? Like, I thought you were going to kill us an elk, and then start questioning my manhood.
Yeah, we're already doing that, Mike. But anyway.
Yeah, I get there with my wife. I'll come home with all these videos and pictures and be like, "Hey, look at this deer, look at this buck." She's like, "Why didn't you shoot it?" I'm like,
"Yeah,
he's getting another year." Because I'll be like, "This thing is so cool." I'm like, "It was a 10 yards, 12 yards." She's like, "You let it walk? Like, that's not a bad buck." I'm like, "I've shot a ton of bucks that size." I'm like, "I want
exactly."
You know, like if I,
And at home, that's what I do, John. That's exactly what I do at home. But when I'm somewhere else, first legal animal gets shot. I made that mistake one time on one trip where I said, for opening morning, nice deer came out for the area, right? And I was like, God, it's like 10 minutes after we first light, first day. This was in South Texas hunting public. We were actually on a private ranch, so we had a trespass fee. It is only 23,000 acres and hunting desert mule deer. And I was like, oh, man, this first morning, that's a probably do better. Never saw another deer the rest of 10 days. So that taught me first legal animal, it gets shot because that may be the only one you see. On my moose hunt, that's the only bull moose that I saw until later. In 9 days of hunting that I saw that I would have, I mean, I saw him at a great distance, but did he even have a remote chance for? And he was a good legal bull. And I don't regret that at all.
Where were you hunting when you got that?
In Alaska, east of Delta Junction.
Yeah. And you
actually, yeah. Yeah.
You packed that out, right? You just threw that over your shoulders and carried it out?
No. I tried to come up with something, Mike, but I couldn't.
Pulled out his fork, started up a fire.
It's actually a pretty cool story if you want to know how we got it out.
Yeah.
No, it's funny you bring that up because I've been thinking about that a lot, though, Pete, like as far as what to shoot. Because I have a friend that invited me to go to Illinois the first week of November. And I'm like, there's some giants in Illinois, but he and I were talking. He goes, well, what are you going to do if a 140 or a 150 steps out in front of you? I'm like, I'm not sure.
You're going to kill it. Absolutely.
Like, you know, like, I don't – would I like a 170? Yep. But you know what? Where I hunt, like, 130 is a really big deer.
You know? Really
you know,
big.
So if I get a chance at, like, a 150, you know, that's a – you know, I'm like – because that's the other thing. I'm going to pay money for out-of-state tag, whatever, you know, and if I get an opportunity to fill my freezer, you know, I mean, granted, I love just watching deer. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to shoot a little guy, but, but my goodness, I don't think I'd have the, I know there's gonna be people listening that are going to be judging me when I say this, but I don't have the self-control to let a 150 walk. Unless I see a bigger deer behind it.
But if that one's at 10 yards, I'm shooting that one.
Oh, better believe it, and I'm going to be happy.
You know, it's my whole mindset when I went out west this year, when Chad and I went for a mule deer and antelope, I said, I just want a reasonable representative. And when I got my antelope, you know, we hunted 8 days for a mule deer, and we didn't see a buck. We saw a bunch of does, but we didn't see a buck. And I hunted 20 minutes for antelope. Yeah, actually, I mean, I'm thrilled. I've been wanting antelope for decades, and it's a beautiful animal, and meat is wonderful. But I wish that I had a couple of failed stalks. That stalk would have been more exhilarating that it was successful. Yeah, I'm sure because I plan to go back in a year or so, and I'm sure I'll have some failed stalks in. And then I'll probably come home empty handed because I just said this, you know?
Yep. Yep. Well, it's like my son, you know, took him out youth hunt, first time ever hunting. And he shot a buck by 9:30 in the morning. And all it did was it tipped over. We're out there for 2.5 hours. He kills a buck and it doesn't even run. You know, I'm like, all right, make sure you get ready. I'm like, pick a tree or whatever. You need to make sure you know which way it goes. I said, because it will run, you know, whatever. Yep. And he shoots it and it goes, burp, just tips right on its side. I'm like, really? Yeah. And I'm like, you know, that's not how it works. So I'm like, you see all the hours.
Wait a minute. I watch the TV shows. That's always how it works. Within a half an hour on TV, they shoot those big monster bucks.
And rock music turns on as soon as the deer starts walking through the
woods. That's right.
Well, that's what I love about those shows. Like, you know,
I hate that music on them. To your question, we get off point again. is that you asked where I killed it in Alaska. It was at the drainage of the Gulkana Glacier, which was about 5 hours east of the town of Paxson. I'm going to tell a story about that hunt when I come see you guys at both places. It's a story about being charged by a bull moose, and also in an event that happened that completely changed my life. So I want to let that hang. I don't want to spoil
it for you. Yeah, perfect. This is what I want.
You're listening to this, and you want your life to change
for the better.
Hope Chapel or Heartland Bible Church, March 15th or 16th, and Pete will tell the story. It could change your life.
Yes.
Yeah. It could.
Amen.
March 14th at but you have a couple of coming together, right?
Well,
March 15th,
Mike, 16th at mine. Say the 14th because there's no event on the
14th.
15th. You're not even flying into town on the 15th. Don't tell them the 14th.
Is it the 15th?
The 15th, Friday night for us.
17, yeah, 15, 16, 17. Yep.
Then we need to double check those planes.
Mike has partnered with another church. Is that right, Mike?
A New Testament church here in town is hosting it for us because our little chapel wouldn't be large enough to hold the massive crowd that we're expecting.
Okay.
Or they've got a nice kitchen and we don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was hoping it'd be like Simon and Garfunkel in Central Park crowd. Yeah. You remember that one back in the day?
I saw them live in Toronto, but it was good on a reunion tour they did.
Yep. Oh, wow. That's cool. Nice.
That's cool. I've seen Grand Funk Railroad too.
Oh, they're coming to they're coming to a neighboring town in May. Yep.
Yeah.
Mark, you get
it going? I'm talking to Mark about getting me some tickets.
Sweet. Yeah, I heard you know it. I heard you know a guy.
Now, see, here's the thing. It's at a casino, and I just here is a casino, one of those venues. But I'd like to just so I can meet him in person. What a great dude he was. I mean, that was such a surprise. Getting him on the show and hearing him and talk about how he came to Jesus and how his, I love how he talked about he has a talent, not a gift. Did y'all catch that when he talked about that? He has a talent and not a gift. The gifts are love, kindness, gentleness, faithfulness, self, all those. But being a musician is a talent, and we're supposed to give our talents back to God as much as we can. I thought, wow, what a great way. That's one of the things in that story that resonated with me a lot, is that distinction between there. Because so often we say, man, what a gift you have. No, it's a talent. It's not a gift.
Pete, you've done 215 podcasts now?
223 is out today.
Okay. Yeah, I was listening to it earlier.
Okay. This is Jason Kolaski, Watchtower today,
223. Yep.
223 out today.
So 223. And I know these conversations doing podcasts, like people will say something and it resonates, or you kind of chew on it for a while. It's never happened when I've interviewed John, but
same.
But you same.
Yet you guys keep calling me back. Like, oh,
hey, who can I get
fill this hole? Yeah, John will say yes.
But Pete, you've interviewed a lot of people. Like,
I have.
Are there? I mean, so it's cool that that's still happening. Like that, Mark says something like that, Mark Farner, and you still, that it stuff still resonates, and you can chew on that. And I think there's a little bit of a side blessing that comes with doing this, is that you get to talk to a lot of really fascinating people and hear a little bit about their faith journey, and that impacts you as well. And I've been blessed by it. I've got some new friendships that I didn't have before. And I don't want to put you on the spot, but who are some of your most memorable guests for you on your show? And don't say John.
Well, I was going to say, I had this question asked last Saturday when I was at the event over in Collinwood. I was speaking. People ask me that question a lot. Who's your favorite guest? And I tell them, for me personally, The ones I enjoy doing the most are the ones when I have pastors and we talk about theology stuff. That's the ones I enjoy. And surprisingly to the listener, those have just as many, if not more, downloads than the ones on outdoors. Now, outdoor people, there are a few people that stand out in my mind as, and here's the thing, after doing this almost 5 years, Mike, unfortunately, some of the people from 3 years ago may be lost in my memory bank. But if I would go back and say, oh, I remember that conversation, that was awesome. But there's a couple that I think my conversation, this was early. This was like episode 20. I did a two-part with a lady named Meredith McCord. And Meredith is the, she holds over 200 IGFA world records, mostly on the fly. Some conventional tackle, some all tackle, some line class, but she, her story of how she started chasing world records, fishing with her dad, and then how she so quietly and unobtrusively goes on mission trips to Peru and Bolivia and does and to Russia and does these things without it. I mean, she doesn't brag about it, doesn't talk about it. She just, I just found out about it. And some of the things that she does, and her way of communicating that, those were great episodes. I really, and I've gone back and listened to those a couple of times, and I'm working on getting her back on the show now because it's been many years, but just a great human being. I'd say the conversation I had with David Blanton was really, really good. He is such a passionate believer in Christ, and he's so well known, and he's so transparent about mistakes he's made, things he's been through, and how God's grace, you know, last year he had a son that passed away, and and ironically, I went and saw him at SHOT Show, if I may digress a little bit, and because we've been texting ever since our interview back and forth. Of course, when his son died, I've been really keeping up with him pretty regular by text, and I set a time to go see him at SHOT Show, and we were talking about his son passing away, and I realized then that his son died on the same day that my son died. My son died in 2000. His died in 2023, but they were both July 5th, and when he said July 5th, I was like, oh, David, I just realized this, you know, this same day. And then we had another connection. But David is such a good guy. And to be as popular and as famous, and he is just as real as they come. So I'd say him, the Hank Parker discussion was, dude, if you want to get fired up for Jesus, you got to listen to the Hank Parker show. Mm-hmm. That guy has it going on. I've told John this, I wish I could quote scripture like him. I cannot. I've never learned how to do that. I get the chapter and verse wrong all the time. I can tell you what it says, but I know it's in Romans. I can't tell you where, you know. Right. But the way he does that, man, it is so infectious. So I really like that show a lot. Actually, I'm going to go back. The show I did with David won a podcasting contest. First place in a podcasting contest, the show I did with David Blanton. Those are the three that really, or four that really stand out in my mind. But I also, and I want to go back to this, and I'm not saying this because John's on the show, because I didn't know you at this time, Mike, but John and Chris and I do a lot of these pastor shows, and some of those have really getting just different insight from different pastors. And the way that John and Chris both have been able to articulate in such an easy to understand way some of these complex theological positions and stances and beliefs and concepts have been really have helped me grow and have significantly helped my vocabulary. And I don't say that jokingly. I'm serious to say, wow, the way that John said that, the way that they made that so easy to understand has helped me when I go speak at places and when I do my show to think, I need to think, rethink how I've been saying this in the past. And so,
yeah,
there's a lot. There's just so much.
That whole iron sharpens iron thing, right? I mean, that's the beauty of, of what you do with believers is mm-hmm. that, you know, you do something a lot of people don't do. And that, you know, Sunday morning is kind of it for a lot of folks, but you have this weekly touch point with people yeah. that you might not even know that well, but mm-hmm. but how beautiful is that? Like, there's this natural connection yeah. that happens between believers, and there's something to be said about when someone shares their story of how it doesn't just, it's not just a, wow, that's awesome, but it challenges our hearts and mm-hmm. makes us reflect and strengthens us. So I think that's really yeah. a cool element of a Christian podcast is that yeah. it's, you know,
I just remembered one I did recently with Mackenzie Smith, the young mm-hmm. girl, Mackenzie yep. from Kansas. Yep. I've gotten so many emails about that show.
Is she the Overlander?
No, that was Lee Reiser. Mackenzie's the one who is her and her husband were living in different Airbnbs.
Yeah.
And she told her story of sexual abuse and lifelong disease yep. because of being sexually assaulted and stuff. It's the first time she's ever told that story to anybody other than her husband. And what an honor that was. Ooh, right.
Yeah.
But she has told me, I was on her show last week. She started a podcast because of being on mine and being able to talk about it. But she told me that she had, I don't remember the number, over 50, 60 people reach out to her through that podcast that have had similar. And it's like John said, you never know how it's reaching people. And you guys know as pastors, when you're preaching, you're looking at your congregation, you don't know what seed's being planted. And that's one of the hardest parts of pastoring is you don't know your impact. Well, I'm just sitting up here in my attic talking into a microphone. I got no clue who's listening to it.
Right.
Yeah. But then you meet these guys in Tennessee or had an email from a fella in some cut over Louisiana. What kind of name is that? But the town cut over Louisiana emailed me over the weekend and had a prayer concern and was talking about how a specific show really, really helped him. I think, see, that's why you do it.
Yeah,
that's why you do it, because you don't know who it's helping. And the fact that you don't know is okay, because we're trusting the Holy Spirit to let it hit who it needs to hit, how it needs to hit them.
Yeah. It's funny, John, I think you do have you're a good communicator. And I think you do have I don't want to say simplistic, but an easy way about you that communicates deep spiritual truths in a way that's understandable. And so I've had you on a couple times, and I don't see a rise in listenership. What I do see, though, is more comments. I've had a lot of comments, like the one we did on bearing one another's burdens. I got a lot of emails and feedback on that from people that I know are not necessarily tracking with the Lord, but it felt like, hey, that was really, it was mm-hmm. empowering to me. And
well, I appreciate Pete, that.
You know, Billy Graham one time told me not to drop names, but I ran into Dave Blanton at Harrisburg.
Well, Billy Graham's name is a pretty big name to drop there, Mike.
When Billy someday, and I, when you're up here, someday. I'll tell you the story.
Oh, yeah, you got to hear the story someday, Pete. It's pretty cool.
I had dinner with Billy Graham one time, so I'll tell you that story really? When you come up next week. Yeah, but David, what the spirit about that man is just unbelievable. I, you know, to have some time to just sit and talk with him was incredible. I really
great man,
just a neat man.
Yep. He really is so, great man. He really is. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so, we're at about an hour. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to wrap up the question here. I would say that those shows, if anybody wants to tune in to some of the older episodes, I would say the ones with Meredith McCord, David Blanton, Hank Parker, and the one with Kinsey. Those are some that I think, in addition to the theological ones, that would really resonate with most people.
Yeah. Good. Thanks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So my wrap up, and John, maybe you're better at wrapping this up since you're much more eloquent than I am. My hope with this podcast was to kind of whet people's appetite a little bit to come to these dinners, to come hear Pete, and to maybe to come with a soft heart, or to be thinking about who can you invite that might need to be able to need to hear this and need to hear some of these stories, and or maybe they're just looking to hear some outdoor stories, and we go from there. But
yeah,
that was my goal. I don't know, John, if you want to add anything to that or.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, twofold, right? I mean, we want to have a good time, and yep. we want to tell people about Jesus, right? And why? Because yeah. we love people and we love Jesus. Like, there's just that's yep. just where it's at, and mm-hmm. and we love the outdoors. I mean, that's what's connecting me with Mike. I mean, I can say I've had a number of lunches with a man who ate a meal with Billy Graham, and. So I'm almost there.
Pete, like, we've shared a lunch with Pete as well.
So. Yeah, yeah, I've had a lunch with Pete as well. Yes. And, you know, well, good friend. And that's the cool part is that
got to dine with the impoverished too.
Yeah, yeah, but you guys have both become very good friends of mine, and to be able to partner in ministry over shared loves, right, of the outdoors, of other of people, and of Christ. I mean, it's a great honor and blessing, and I'm excited to see kind of what the Lord does. And I'd say to whoever might be listening to this, maybe you're not into the outdoors, but you love Jesus. You know what? Invite your friends that love the outdoors and come. You know, yeah. maybe you're not into the Jesus stuff, but you love the outdoors. There's gonna be plenty of stuff for you too. You know, mm-hmm. show up and come. Right? I mean, come as you are. I'm just excited to see what happens, you know, and it should be a great time. We got some good food, we got some good door prizes, speakers okay, and should be a good time. And and rumor has it Mike might show up at our event and I might show up at his. So
well, I will definitely somebody needs to get me to both of them.
Yeah, yeah. I think Pete's coming to both. Man.
Right.
Yeah.
That's if somebody picks him up at the airport.
Yeah, somebody picks me. Well, there is Uber. I guess y'all have that up there.
Yeah, we do.
No, not so much where we live.
No.
We're out in the sticks pretty good.
Okay. Well, for anybody listening, what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna eat Yankee food. Just so you know, we don't eat taters for breakfast down here. We eat grits, so don't even serve me taters for breakfast. I'm gonna leave it on my plate. Okay. But besides that, I love to get to do this. I get the chance to talk to people. I get a chance to share my story, which I don't get to do much on my podcast, and tell some hunting stories, campfire stories, you know, tailgate stories, whatever you want to call them. And I always share a couple of those, but then I also get a chance to talk about how passionate I am about Jesus and what he's done for me and what I believe he can do for you. And at the end of the day, I just want people to know that we make a lot of decisions in our lives, from where we're going to eat supper to our careers, our occupations, or what. But the best decision you can make is making a decision to follow Christ. And it will change your life in such a way that it's just hard to describe, but I'll try to. So yeah. I'll be at Mike's on the 15th and John's on the 16th and 17th. Yeah. So you get to hear wild game talks and a sermon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two different things. 17th. I get to sit there and it'll be weird.
Yeah.
I don't usually sit in my church and listen to someone else preach. It doesn't happen very often.
Weird, isn't it? It's weird, isn't it? When you do that. Yeah. It's weird. Yeah.
So no pressure. No pressure. So.
Yeah, I just hope they don't issue a call for me to come up there afterwards.
Probably not.
John, you want to step out for just a minute?
Yeah,
John, I'll make an opening for you.
Okay. Over
here. They run you out for Pete.
I can't. I can't hold a candle to John. There's no way. There's no way.
Well, I didn't say what position. We're right. always in looking Custodian. For janitorial or worship director. We can find
I can play a mean kazoo, but
yeah. Last time I sang in church, they tried to cast out demons out of me. What was coming out of my voice? I am not talented with the gift of singing at all. I can't play a radio without static.
Yeah. All right, folks. Thanks for enduring this, the sound quality and the humor and all this stuff. It gives you a little bit of a flavor of what you're going to get next week. And thanks again for listening, and God bless.